Welcome back to the show, everybody. 7:16 here on a Friday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer. It is a day to listen. We'll be hearing stories throughout the morning here on the show and a conversation with former NHLer John Chabot, who's done some outstanding work in northern communities, First Nations communities, over the past several decades. John Chabot will join us later on in the show as well. We had an early morning conversation with Dave Poulin, and we'll have that for you coming up just after 8 o'clock this morning. We had more into Sens talk coming up. Don't forget, we got the Sens game for you tonight. It's a busy day, actually. Huge sports night. 67s, as you just heard, will kick off their new season. They're on the road in Oshawa. You can stream the game at tsn1200.ca. Kenny Walls will be in Oshawa with the team. You can find that on our website starting at 7:30. Note the start time. 67s then are back home for the home opener Sunday afternoon. Gatineau Olympique, who started their season last week, play their home opener at the, what do you want to call it, Centre Slush Puppy?
Le Centre de Slush Puppy.
There you go.
And I wonder if Derek Brassard is going to be over there as well. Kind of an interesting time in training camp. I don't think he's playing tonight, right? He's playing tomorrow night for the Sens?
Hang on now. Let me just find.
I think he was in the lineup. I thought
he was playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means that he won't be there tomorrow night when but maybe Sunday afternoon, because they
checking.
Play. They play Saturday night and Sunday afternoon versus Patrick Waugh in Quebec.
Maybe checking the phone, seeing how the scores are going. And I would also think, and for Tyler Boucher, kind of keep going back to your very interesting circumstance behind the scenes, I believe, as a 10th pick overall, all the COVID and being in Canada, positive that he's with the 67s, negative is, hey, it's a lot, you know. And this reminds me a little bit of, I won't go quite, was it Brian Lee that they drafted ahead of Saul? I'm not, but it's not easy, you know, in this world now that we live in Twitter. I think, and let's use that term, I think they're pumping his tires, having a good camp, and I think he'll play tonight, and then I would assume that he'll be in the lineup for the 67 Sunday. That's just my kind of read. I have no inside information on that, but I think they want him feeling real good about, hey, you had a real good camp, and we really like where you're at, and go back and have a monster year in junior, and hopefully we see that, and hopefully we see him playing the World Junior at Christmas time.
He is going to start tonight, Tyler Boucher, alongside Tim Stützle in the middle, and Angus Cruickshank. But I heard DJ Smith mention yesterday that he's also going to give him some reps at some point during the game tonight with Tkachuk and Norris. So I think you're absolutely right. I think, A, it's a reward for the fact that, by all accounts, he has had a pretty good camp.
Yeah,
a rookie tournament was not so great. This camp has been better. And I think they're going to give him some reps with some real quality players tonight. And I agree with you. Whether because they've talked about the fact that Sunday they're gonna be down to more manageable numbers. But for a junior player, maybe as soon as tomorrow, we may look at Tyler Boucher going back. So he has the ability to maybe play for the 67s in the home opener on Sunday.
Yeah, always in the back of my mind, Jaron. It's certainly changed. But I think back to my mentor, Jack Button, the late great scout. One of the conversations he used to have was sometimes the American kids, hockey sense-wise, comes along a little later because it's not necessarily, you know, as big. I don't think that's the case, but I thought about the same thing when Uruguay was playing against Canada in soccer, JR, where, again, you can play a sport, you can be very good at it, but it is kind of your, you know, your first feel, your first knowledge. In the case of Tyler Boucher, we know that the work ethic is outstanding. We know that he's in great shape. We know that athletically he's a real good hockey player. It's a question of, can all of it kind of come together, right? Like, because on the surface, if you ever watch him practice or do things, you say, boy, that guy's going to be a hell of a player, shoots a puck well, but can the rest of it kind of come along? And I'm assuming that's what the Ottawa Senators are hoping for.
All right, 5 o'clock pregame tonight from Belleville. Dean Brown, Gord Wilson will be there. Graham Creech has your pregame show alongside Jamie Baker tonight at 5. Then tomorrow night, they're at Canadian Tire Center for the only home exhibition game versus the Habs. Again, 5 o'clock pregame. Simmer, yourself, Steve Lloyd. Out at CTC, you're, I'm sure, looking forward to getting back. And interesting to see what kind of crowd they're going to have tomorrow night. People are fire. I mean, the home opener is all but sold out. Be interesting to see how many people are actually out there tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree. And also from a Canadian standpoint, Slavkovsky, I believe, did not play last night, JR. So hopefully. The defenseman's name, how do we say this again?
Jack Eye.
That is so intriguing. And Pooley talking about him playing on a power play. And I'll remove the Sens part because I do think they've got an X next to his name for what happened in the rookie tournament. But, boy, this is so intriguing. And I love Kenny Walls talking about the backstory here of a kid that really couldn't even play at 17 and has worked himself into a good spot, a physical specimen. And when you're tracking the way he is, if you're a Canadiens fan, you have to be thrilled. If you're a Sens fan, looks like they got a pretty tough crew going tomorrow. We got old Sabby in there.
Yeah.
Got Mr. Kastlik, maybe a little Waddy action, maybe Mr. Hetherington as well. So,
yes.
That will be interesting as to whether or not Montreal dresses him tomorrow night, because I do feel in this particular case there's a little bit of payback coming.
I'm guessing if he does play in any of the, and I'm guessing he will play in at least one of the four games versus Ottawa.
Yeah.
I think it happens Tuesday in the home game for Montreal.
That's a good point.
That way you can kind of steer the matchups a little bit.
Yeah, and I think there's a throwdown. I think we're going to see a beef pretty quickly.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So again, games tonight and tomorrow night for the Sens. Red Blacks also playing tonight. It's a very busy night, as we had told you. 67 streaming at TSN1200.ca. Sens game on TSN1200. Red Blacks game out in BC. If you're still if you're still sticking in there, good on you, because tonight's going to be a tough one. 10:30 kickoff from not even 10, 10:30. They're putting this as late as they can.
That's a big shift on a Friday, Jared.
That's a long shift. Yeah.
How do you think Rick Campbell's feeling these days?
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
And honestly, and I go back to a classy man. When you talk about iconic families in the CFL, winning a Grey Cup here in Ottawa, what his dad represented, arguably the best coach in the history of the CFL, to go out and be given not only the head coach, but I believe he's basically the general manager, is he not, or has a say in the player personnel?
Yes.
And to be 9-4, and honestly, you kind of look at that, and I understand things happen, but that's one you'd like to have back, JR. He is such a classy, such a good guy, and man, he must look at this and just be kind of chuckling, saying, are you kidding me? Ottawa was my home. I married an Ottawa girl. I wanted to stay here my entire career. And like I say, 9-4 versus 3-10.
Red Blacks pregame show starts at 9 on 580 CFRA. They'll have the kickoff of the game as well at about 11 o'clock, right after we wrap up our Sens postgame. We'll join the Red Blacks Lions game here on TSN 1200. So we got a doubleheader and a late night for Lever Sage, who's going to be up with Duke Ellingson on the postgame show, and then turning around and be doing the play-by-play for our broadcast of the Panda game tomorrow at noon. So we got a very busy night and a very busy weekend ahead. Love it. Love lots of sports going on. Okay, 7:24. So let's go back to last night's Thursday night NFL game, Dolphins and Bengals. Bengals win the game 27-15. Not many people talking about that. Most people are talking about this.
Play action, Tua rolling to his left. Stops. Nobody's open, Joe. He's going to be sacked back in his own territory at the 47-yard line. Two is down.
He got body slammed. He got thrown down, and they're coming out right now. Jimmy had time to get rid of it. Instead, he gets thrown down hard, and he's not getting up. Oh, boy.
Yeah, he was down for 7 minutes, was eventually stretchered off and taken to hospital, where he spent a couple of hours before he was released. He is in concussion protocol. Should say that he did rejoin the team in time to take the flight back to Miami, or at least that's what we were told was going to happen. So that was the plan for Tua. But again, based on what happened on Sunday in the game versus Buffalo, when he hit his head, got up, had the spaghetti legs, for all of us thought, there's a guy who's got a head injury. And yet there he was, back for the second half of that game. And then after the game, we had all the controversy with the Dolphins saying it wasn't a head injury. It was, in fact, a back injury and an ankle injury. And we had all the talk about, you know, does the NFL's concussion protocol, where we have the independent doctor who's part of the assessing team as well, does that really work? Is it legit, I think, is a question a lot of fans have as well. And then for all of that to play itself out last night in person, and it was, if you are watching, it was really, really ugly. I mean, the close-up of him on the field and his fingers. I don't know if you guys saw that. His fingers are like frozen all in a cockeyed direction. And apparently that's a sign when you have a neurological injury, a brain injury. That's what your hands instinctively are frozen at. Mm-hmm. And it was just so jarring to watch that. And just, again, based on what happened on Sunday, and then for that to happen last night, it's got everybody talking again about whether the NFL does enough and to keep its players out of harm's way. Here is Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel after the game.
I don't think that an injury from last week made him fall the same way this week, you know. But yeah, I do not have any, like, absolutely zero patience for or will ever put a player in a position to, for them to be in harm's way. That is, like, not what I'm about at all, and no outcome of a game would ever influence me being irresponsible as the head coach of the football team.
So many directions we can go into in a conversation about this. Yeah. One of them is, and this has been brought up since the advent of Thursday Night Football, is the fact that you've got these, you know, these humans that are crashing into each other, you know, at unbelievable speeds with incredible size and weight. You've got, you know, and then turning around and doing it all again in 4 days. Is that enough time for players to recover from whatever injuries they have or ailments they had suffered in a game on a Sunday to turn around and play on a Thursday? Is that safe? Many people have said since the advent of Thursday Night Football that this is not, if the NFL is in part about keeping its athletes safe, this is not the right thing to do. And last night we saw it play itself out right on our television screen.
Yeah, and you think historically hockey-wise, Jer, I think Paul Kariya, I think Viktor Kozlov, and of course I think of Eric Lindros, and you see certain situations at certain times where I think was it Kozlov that took the hit? Remember his arms being straight up in the air? You know, and so
same thing as last night.
Yeah, so you see that. Now, I really sincerely believe the coach. I believe in this particular case. I don't really feel like, hey, that, you know, as far as a concussion, and I don't really understand why an independent doctor would lie about him having a concussion if he felt he did. So to that, what I think, and like what you just pointed out, JR, is I don't care if it's 4 days, I don't care if it's 100 days, are you putting the athlete in a very vulnerable spot? If you have other injuries in your body, are you more susceptible to a head injury? Absolutely. And you go back to kind of the concussion, you know, and then his medical history, not to mention the dislocated hip he had came out of college. Yeah, I think that's a real legitimate question. But I do in this case, and the Miami Dolphins certainly are not a very credible group based on their owner. But I'm actually believing the coach there. Are you not? Or because I just feel like I don't know why they'd play him on a third. Now, yeah. Having said that, and what the odds of the players say, I think a lot, and this is where an agent, maybe a family member, you do wonder for the athlete, was he being very sincere in how he was feeling coming into this? So is that where somebody else has to step right in? Probably that's the case. You know,
well, yeah,
this is a typical, hey, I'm going to go and I got to find a way here. I've been under a lot of pressure since I came to Miami. We're unbeaten. I don't feel great, but I'm going to suck it up. That's what I'm kind of probably more worried about. Somebody should have stepped in.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you as well. That I don't think that you know, that there's a giant cover up by the Miami Dolphins and Tua had a concussion on Sunday, and it was kind of like they're going to spit on their hand, rub on his head, and get out there and play. And as you said, I mean, that term, find a way, right? That's a term we use in a positive way in professional sports. Hey, let's find a way to get this guy to play. And it's almost to the detriment of the player's health. But your point about, and we were talking about this, I think, off the air, of, you know, if indeed the injury that had him as questionable, like leading up to last night, like it was early yesterday morning, I said on the air, like two of the, you know, there he is going to play. It was a question mark as to whether he was going to play, and the issue was the back injury. So was, you know, the if you haven't seen the I'll call it the highlight, the replay of the actual sack of Tua last night, this is the honest to God's truth, as it happened in real time and as I'm watching it, and I don't know, Tua's not the biggest quarterback in the NFL, but as I watched the Bengals defensive lineman pick him up and essentially the clip we played said body slam, and that's exactly what it was. Like, he picked him up, and it's kind of a twist, but he throws him down, and it's like he weighs 50 pounds.
Yeah,
and I know that, like, when guys get sacked, they now penalize you for pancaking them, right, falling on top afterwards. It was not like that, and I don't think it was done with any degree of malice, but it just goes to show you, in that case, this was an extremely violent sack, if I can, compared to most that you see now, where he was slammed into the ground, and it was right away you could see as he stayed down, it's like, oh my God, this is like the worst thing based on what happened Sunday, oh, yeah. And it's playing itself out right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and gosh, share and leverage is everything, because obviously he is a very good athlete. If I go into a professional sport like hockey, or anyone for that matter, and I've got a bad ankle and a bad back, my leverage is completely gone. Then the next part that is raised, and I know this is talked a lot about in the National Hockey League, what was put into his body to numb whatever pain he was doing. Like, I think we'd be also super naive to think that he went into last night's game unmedicated. Do you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. you know, and so for the athletes, yeah, I mean, it is so scary. And I guess more and more, and I've become so soft as I've gotten older. I'm not a fan of contact sports. I'm not a fan of teenagers playing football, playing contact hockey, because I just understand and recognize that nothing good can really come from it. And in this case, you just wonder, like, as you take a step back, how did that fella play on Thursday night football? Like, was that you're 3-0. Was that really necessary that he had to? Like, why would not? And as I said, you've got an owner that's suspended, and I believe the coach being very sincere, but why would somebody not? And like I say, from a family or an agent, say, listen, man, take a week off here. And that's the part that you hope will be learned going forward. But unfortunately, especially in football, never seems to change. Like, was that the end of the world if he didn't play Thursday night football against the Bengals? Of course it wasn't,
yeah,
you know?
Well, and I'm not here to defend, but here would be my view on the thinking of the organization and how we think, how organizations think, and I think how fans generally think. You play 17 games. In the NFL, every game is important.
No, I know.
The difference between a loss in one game and a win in one game can be the difference between winning a division title. It can be making the playoffs and getting a home game and missing the playoffs.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Like, we emphasize that so much, and that's why guys who maybe shouldn't play end up playing. Organizations talking themselves and players talking themselves into playing who probably shouldn't play.
Oh, and you also hear in the NFL, especially JR, and it was comical with the Players Association, the most lucrative sport, you know, we can even argue in the world now, has the worst Players Association ever. They don't do anything to help their players. And we often hear about a guy saying, listen, I got to play because someone else is going to take my spot, which in this case is a quarterback, isn't the case on one game. But so agreeing, JR, that, hey, this should have been the situation where you did have an opportunity. Somebody steps in. And I also, in the back of my mind, kind of wonder, with all the negative talk of Sunday of concussion protocol, if they sat him out for Thursday, are they worried about somebody saying, oh, I told you he had a concussion? Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That was in the back of my mind watching that last night. Was like, God, did they kind of push this along? Or did he feel like, listen, I gotta show everybody it wasn't a concussion? And then, unfortunately, end up in that spot last night, and very sad.
Well, for Tua now, and we'll find out. He is in concussion protocol, so that's one thing that we know right now. And the Dolphins, because they play on Thursday, do not play now for the next 10 days. So there is a period of recovery time. But you're looking at a guy who suffered a significant injury in college when he was playing for Alabama. Like, it was a hip displacement.
Well, it was basically Bo Jackson. I mean, yeah. You know, in the mod. No, I shouldn't say that, because I think Bo Jackson had a hip replacement. But no, yeah, he had a completely dislocated hip, which I think made a lot of people question whether or not he should be the first pick overall.
Yeah, which he didn't end up being that, but he was still a very high pick. But so yeah, a significant injury there, and then what we have seen now. This head trauma, and as we've come to know now, once you start getting concussions, they become they become much easier to get the next one, and they last longer. So there is that. There is the aspect of whatever injury the Dolphins claim that he had from Sunday, whether it's a back injury or an ankle injury or both. Like, we're talking about a very beat up human being that's 2 years into his NFL career, and you have to, I mean, seriously question. You know, what is going to be, at the end of the day, the longevity of Tua Tagovailoa's career as a quarterback in the NFL?
And I have to think, JR, not that he hasn't made some decent money, but in the back of their mind, if you're in high school, then you go to college. As you become a first-round pick, there has to be so much of your motivation of getting that big payday coming out of your contract, like we see in the National Hockey League. And of all people to be the backup quarterback, think of how much he could learn from Teddy Bridgewater, right? I mean, this guy was on a track to be one hell of a quarterback before he mangled his leg, right?
Yep. Yeah, with Minnesota.
Oh,
yeah,
God, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a guy right there that was, you know, again, and pretty incredible he's come back. But what this means financially to a lot of these guys in trying to come out of that fifth year and basically get your guaranteed money and your payday, you know, has to be almost like, hey, that's my ticket right there. That's my motivation. Not that they don't want to win, but you look at that and now you say to yourself, my God, I think this is headed more towards RG3. You know, you're headed towards, hey, hopefully he can make it to year five.
On text at 12-1200, media and fans always glorify, quote, fighting through the pain. Think about how we talk about hockey players in the playoffs. Playing hurt is part of sports culture, and it's dangerous. That comes from Jofa.
Well, Jofa, the other part I'll say is, you know, and again, that's been a big issue in the National Hockey League, JR, is the pain medication. That's the other part that really goes hand in hand, and I can't even imagine what happens in the National Football League. Like you said, you know, you're going to do whatever you can and take whatever you can to get through 17 weeks and try to keep earning a paycheck.
I do have some love, by the way, for Jofa McCooperalls. That's an outstanding handle for a Friday.
And I can even picture the Jofa helmet and just a little Cooperall action as well as it was featured in the OHL when I played back in 1985.
Bengals win the game 27-15, knock the Dolphins from the ranks of the unbeaten. Full slate of games coming up on Sunday, including a Sunday morning game. This week over in London, as it'll be the Saints taking on the Vikings. We'll have that game for you on TSN 1200 Sunday morning. And then after the 67s game Sunday afternoon, we'll have Patriots, Mapats, Simmer, and the Packers on late Sunday afternoon. And then the Sunday night game, Mabucks taking on Machiefs. It is the Chiefs and the Buccaneers. That's a Sunday night game here on TSN 1200. All right, 7:38. What's the latest on Jake Chychrun? According to Darren Dreger, talks are, quote, intensifying for a trade out of Arizona. We'll get into that discussion when we return on this Sens, Red Blacks, and 67s game day on TSN 1200. Welcome back, 7:47. We're going to be pleased to be joined later on in the show by a former NHLer, over 500 games in the National Hockey League. John Chabot did some outstanding work in northern communities with the First Assist program. John will detail that and what life was like for him growing up as an Indigenous person. And you can imagine what life was like for him playing hockey growing up and then eventually making the National Hockey League in the 1980s.
Yeah, incredible, Jaron. Had a chance to play against Johnny, the sweetest set of hands you've ever seen. Had a real nice NHL career. Also coached in the Quebec League, coached a couple of years in the New York Islanders. And my experience, my first under-18 team, I think it was Rob DeMaio, Theo Fleury, Everett Santapass, and myself. We're all bunking together at the under-18 team in Banff, Alberta. We actually stayed in a youth hostel, Jer. So all four of them, but got to know Everett, got to know Craig Berube, Trevor Halverson, Chris Simon, and a lot of kids. And growing up playing in the Sioux, Jer, was interesting because Chris coming from Wawa, a lot of the kids had to come from smaller centers to go and play junior hockey and just the path, you know, and overcoming the odds like John did. To go and to face everything they did, you look back and just think, God, how incredible that is to, you know, get over all those hurdles and obstacles. And Teddy Nolan was an assistant coach when I played in the Sioux. We went to the reserve where he lived. It really is. You look back and just say, God, I wish I had more awareness. So awesome that we're recognizing this and getting the discussion going and talking a lot about what has happened with Aboriginal people here in Canada.
Yeah, and it was nice to see the Sens amongst other NHL teams acknowledging that yesterday, wearing the orange shirts. And I'm sure we'll see at least the staff probably with orange ties tonight for the game in which they'll play against the Maple Leafs down in Belleville. It is National Day for Truth and Reconciliation for a lot of people. It is not a work day today, not for everybody, but for some. Schools are open, though, and in case you're wondering about services, because it's a bit of a hodgepodge, no mail delivery today, the banks will be closed, but there is garbage pickup today, and malls and grocery stores will open as per usual.
Yeah, so. And I don't think, JR, it's by design, but I'm sure Hammer can speak to the fact that you also have the Quinte region, which in growing up and the understanding of, again, Aboriginal in that area, that I think this kind of, like I said, I don't think it had anything to do with why they're playing the game in Belleville. But that's a pretty good place to be playing based on what we're trying to discuss today.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll have a game for you tonight. 5 o'clock pregame, 7 o'clock faceoff on TSN 1200. Now, so there is some, I guess, some news on the Jake Chychrun front, as it sounds like maybe things are heating up as far as a move on Jake Chychrun goes. Here's TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger.
What is clear now as the regular season is fast approaching is that the trade interest in Chychrun is once again intensifying. Some say the Coyotes have softened to some degree, at least in their expected return, and are more willing now to take on a contract or contracts. Granted, you've got to have a first-round draft pick. You've got to have a prospect involved in all of this. So the ask is still high. Now, some of the teams that are listed with interest include the Ottawa Senators, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Edmonton Oilers, the Los Angeles Kings, the St. Louis Blues, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and on it goes. However, it's a challenging one. Despite the quality of the player and the contract, there's some cap hurdles that many of the teams I just mentioned are going to have to overcome.
Yeah, I would think that 31 teams would be interested in Jake Chychrun based on the price. But, you know, obviously Ottawa, it's well known of their interest in Jake Chychrun. They've been kicking tires on this for several months, and it makes sense for so many different reasons, as we've discussed. I'm going to say ad nauseum over the weeks and months since his name first surfaced. But some interesting, like the Kings make sense. They got a pile of prospects that maybe some of them are starting to stall a little bit, but maybe that Arizona still might have interest in. We have heard St. Louis's name. I think if there's a team that's in there that I think maybe the biggest competition to the Sens getting Jake Chychrun, I think it's two. I think it's L.A. and St. Louis are the two. I don't know. I would imagine. I understand why Toronto would be interested. I just don't know how they make it work.
Yeah.
How does Toronto make it work from a salary cap perspective? They've got some decent prospects that I'm sure Arizona would be interested in. They have their first round pick, although if Toronto plays as well in the regular season as most people think they do, that means it's a pick that's in the 20s some point. No, not as desirable as a potential lottery pick that you might be looking at for a team. You know, Ottawa could miss the playoffs, right? So it's a lottery pick. All that to say, I don't know how the Leafs, for example, would make it work salary cap.
Yeah, I agree, Jerry, and I've been working my phones as well, and my sources are telling me they are willing to move Chychrun, but they're not going to give him away, Jerry.
Yeah. Things are intensifying.
Here's the other funny part. The St. Louis stuff is a bunch of smoke.
You don't think they're interested?
Well, this is Bill Armstrong, who worked for Doug Armstrong, and what you do is you put that out there. I'm not saying that they are or they aren't, but one of the things that managers do often, George McPhee used to do this with Brian Burke all the time. Burke, he'd say when he's in Vancouver, listen, if you're trading somebody, put my name out there so that we can intensify. They may or may not be, but in the case of Arizona, yeah, we'll see what ends up happening. From the Sens' perspective, the obvious would be Zaitsev, a first-round pick, and then what is their interest in, and I would move away from Shane Pinto in a sense of, I think you could end up doing this. What do they realistically think of Lassie Thompson, and what do they think about Ridly Gray? And that would be, to me, kind of the obvious. Are the Ottawa Senators willing to move, probably coming off the World Junior, on Ridly Gray? Do you want to trade Ridly Gray, a first-round pick, and get rid of Zaitsev's contract for Jake Chychrun? Personally, I would do that in a heartbeat. And I say this with, and again, a bit of thinking here. I like Ridly Gray a lot, JR.
Mm-hmm.
I love him as a player. And part of it was a pitcher yesterday when he was on with Lloydie. I'm really worried long-term as to how he's going to hold up physically. That's just my own opinion. And you sell high at these World Juniors. And to me, if that's the deal that's on the table from the Ottawa Senators, I'd do that in a heartbeat way more than I would ever entertain Shane Pinto. That's just my, that's Sean Simpson, Ottawa, Canada.
Yeah. So a deal centered on Greg, Lassie Thompson.
No. One of the two?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No.
First-round pick.
Yeah, but who's...
And if you want to include Zaitsev's contract...
Yeah. Oh, and a second-round pick.
Oh, you have to include it. But if you want to include Zaitsev's contract, I think the potential is there that you're going to have to maybe give up something extra as well.
But here would be the question, Jer, and I say this because Ottawa has some very good prospects. Do you think that, first of all, Toronto, I don't even know, as the kid at the University of Minnesota in a first-round pick.
Yep.
Do you think anybody out there is offering more than Ridly Gregg in a first-round pick for Chychrun? Well, I don't think they are. And so that, to me, puts you very much in the ballpark. I find it hard. Like I say, I'd go back to last year's trade deadline. Go back to the draft. Go back to all the talk about, what they're looking for. Yep. You know,
ask is high. There's no doubt about it.
But it hasn't been met, I guess, is my point.
Right.
But I don't believe at the end of the day they're going to get more than a Ridley Gregg and a first-round pick for Jake
Tucker. I would tend to agree with you, but we had this conversation with Dave Poulin when he was on with us earlier, mm-hmm. which we will replay with you coming up after 8 o'clock. But I think it was either you or he that raised the good point, right, Chikrin. There is no impetus for Arizona to move him at this point. They are under no pressure whatsoever. He's got 3 more years left in his contract. And while he's hurt right now, he is going to recover. He is going to play. He has, to our knowledge, not made a trade demand, i.e., I'm not going to show up. He is going to show up at this point play until he gets traded. Yep. So he's being a good soldier, as it were, that way. So for Arizona, I think what you're doing is you got a bunch of fish on the line right now. And you're hoping that somebody has to come up because of two circumstances. Either they get a frontline defenseman or a frontline player hurt, and they're under pressure to win this year. I think that, or a team gets off to a very slow start. So I think injury or especially a contender, but maybe even not, like an Ottawa Senator team. If they get off to a slow start, you don't think that pushes the pressure onto Pierre Dorion to go, you know what? I got to improve things here. So I'm willing to bump my offer up a little bit from where it is right now.
Oh, I totally agree, Jared. And again, part of the argument would be in certain circumstances, and I go back to Rick Nash in Columbus, you go back to spots where Eric Karlsson, you felt like, man, I got to move this guy. I would assume if you're Arizona, at this point, if you have not met that, why wouldn't you go in? And I go back to Matt Duchene. It was November, 17th when they made the trade? You know, you look at that and totally agree that, hey, this guy gets back playing, somebody starts to struggle. And as far as your fishing analogy, like I'm feeling here, okay, you usually have your 4 rods out, right? Now, are you going to throw some chum in the water, Jer? Like, do you toss a little bit in there?
Do I need to initially?
But is this kind of where you're at, though, as the season starts, right? You know, your lines have been out for a while, mm-hmm. and you're having a good day.
You're just trolling.
Well, you're having a couple cold ones. It's a nice day. You got the tunes going.
Yeah, you're not even in the best fishing hole right now. You're just sort of, let's carry this on a little bit further. Yeah. You're just going from your dock toward the hole where you know the good ones are.
Exactly.
But you're seeing what you can find along the way.
Yeah. But are you willing to go to the Flemish Cap?
Okay, 2 guys that have caught nothing but rock bass and sunfish.
Are you willing to go to the Flemish Cap? That's the question from the Perfect Storm.
Do not question my fishing abilities. While I may not be a great fisherman, I will remind you that when the great Lake Ontario salmon hunt, which may or may not still exist, existed, and I was living in Toronto, and I got taken out on media day somehow, some way, even though I've never fished in my life, I caught the second biggest trout that was caught that year. Don't tell me for a second that I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to fishing.
Exactly. And can I tell
even though the guy just put everything on the line and I just sat by it.
Can I tell a bit of a fun story based on fishing?
You can always tell a fun story.
Brad Smith, Motor City Smitty, had a fishing boat in Ontario, and one of the great stories, and you know, he's moved on, he's gotten married, but his ex-wife was on the boat one day, and a family came up, a parent, and said, listen, is Brad around? And she said, no. He said, this is our son-in-law's boat, and his wife at the time said, well, no, that's actually my husband. So unfortunately, Smitty had not covered his tracks, he was dating Sed's parents' daughter.
Hang on, they just happened upon the boat?
I guess. Smitty, something must have got crossed up in the communication part. Oh, so the current wife was on the boat.
Right. Talking about having multiple lines in the water.
And the future in-laws wanted to know what was going on. So my Motor City Smitty story of the day.
Okay.
But back to, that's the part that I think Arizona's looking at, Jared, to be back to being serious. Are you willing to go to the Flemish Cap in November? You know,
not all of us have seen the Perfect Storm, including me.
Oh, you haven't?
No, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, so the whole reference is the Flemish Cap is almost going to Greenland.
Okay.
And at that point, when the storm hit, their decision was, do you basically go to Portugal to avoid the storm, or do you try to sail back or boat back? And obviously, we know that didn't turn out to be the right choice.
Yeah. I guess the million-dollar question is going to be, oft debated. Is the Chychrun, I don't think for a second, I don't doubt for a second that Chychrun trade is going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, I.
The question is, is it going to happen before the before the beginning of the season? Is it going to happen, in the early part of the season, or is this something that drags into middle of the season, right up until the trade deadline? I think that's still the question. My best guess right now, I think this goes into the early part of the season, if you're Arizona, and it's Bill Armstrong in Arizona, right?
Absolutely,
I get my Armstrongs mixed up.
I know,
Bill Armstrong in Arizona, again. You just sit there and you wait for something bad to happen. It's hockey. Guys get injured or teams are crap that thought they were going to be good. Somebody, somehow, some way of 31 other teams, all of whom would have varying interest in a player like Jake Chychrun, somebody is going to struggle or deal with injury, and they're going to give you something close to, if not everything, that you want.
Yeah, I totally agree. For a second. And I also, and a little surprised, and maybe I'm way off, I don't see a circumstance, JR, of the Florida Panthers getting out from underneath Bobrovsky anytime soon. Does the Spencer Knight, and you have an opportunity to bring Chychrun back. They need defense. He is a local kid to there. Oh, I agree. And also from an LA perspective, are you trying to get out from underneath maybe some of these overrated prospects? And that's a part of that's such a big key in this, is that when you're kind of trading for futures, all of this is dependent on what do the Arizona Coyotes think of. And Bill Armstrong comes from an amateur scouting background, JR. What do they think of your prospects? I mean, that at the end of the day, that's doing this or being a part of, selling off prospects players back in the day.
Yeah.
That's all about, hey, we went to Ottawa and Peter Bonder was like, hey, really want Brooks Like. I mean, what do they honestly think of? And I would find it hard to believe. And I mean this, I love Ridly Gray. But I would tell you right now that I would say to myself, man, if there was ever a time to sell high on a young player,
we've seen examples of that. With all due respect, you lived it yourself with the goalie back in the day, Justin Pogge.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
For sure.
And that wasn't you selling. That was you guys buying high. Right. It's like, oh, my God, this guy is lights out. You end up trading Tuukka Rask.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Didn't quite work out like the organization had hoped, unfortunately. No, you imagine Tuukka Rask playing with Toronto.
No, it put me on Pogge. But
if you haven't used that line before, you should. That's outstanding.
Even Hammer's laughing, so that's good.
Who was the at the World Juniors? I can't remember which of the two Foots. Was it Nolan Foote that Tampa ended up trading to Jersey?
No, I think it was Cal Foote, was it not? Am I getting it right with the big snapper?
Yeah.
That guy's terrible. Can't skate a lick.
But he had a good World Junior, scored some goals.
Absolutely.
And Tampa moved on from him in a trade deadline trade.
Yeah, it was Blake Coleman, right?
Yeah.
No, it was perfect. Like, and I'm watching him in the World Junior, and I'm just thinking, this is perfect. He is never going to release a puck at the NHL level like he does in Junior.
Right.
So sell high. And again, not to get rid of prospects at all, but man, Jared, that the World Junior hype, and it's amazing because the guys go into their first year in the American League, and all of a sudden it's night and day. If you honestly ever wanted to do an auction, your best time is post World Junior to look at your players.
Now,
it really and it can bite you once in a while, but the hype machine, especially in Canada, is very high.
Now, I like you would share a bit of concern long term for Ridly Gray because he plays the big man's game and the medium sized man's body. But man, he's a get or done guy too.
He's
hell of a prospect.
How could you not love him? And now you look at a guy like Brendan.
But you
Gallagher.
Got you know what? And but you gotta. And I go back to this point. Everybody wants to make a trade and give up nothing.
If
you want to make a trade for a really really good asset like a Jake Chychrun, you got to feel some pain, man.
Yeah.
You got to be willing.
Are you
to
willing
feel
to
pain?
Go to the Flemish Cap in November? And put your chum in the water.
Let's all ponder that one, shall we? Just past 8 o'clock. Top of the hour news and sports update is upcoming. And then an early morning conversation with Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey insider. He watched the Jets beat the Habs late last night. Some chat about that, about the Sens and the power play conundrum, and about Jake Chychrun. That's all on the way right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.